This is a recording of Learning Nephi's Language, Creating a Context for 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2, by Neil Rapley, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, read by Scott Dunaway. Nephi's Language Without Context, an Enigma. It was not long after the Book of Mormon was published before Nephi's statement that he wrote using, quote, the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians, end quote, 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2, started raising eyebrows. It has continued to perplex even the best LDS scholars, who have put forward no fewer than 5 different interpretations of the passage. Some have even pointed out that there seems to be no logical reason for Nephi's statement, since anyone who could read the text would know what language it was written in. I suggest that the reason the phrase has remained hard to interpret is that Nephi's statement continues to be interpreted without any context, and this is so despite the fact that Egyptian writing by Israelite scribes has been known and attested to in Nephi's very time period since at least the 1960s. Though Latter-day Saint scholars have known and written about these writings, they have rarely used them such as evidence for the Book of Mormon or to bolster support for pre-existing theories about Nephi's language, rather than using those texts to create a context in which Nephi's statement can be interpreted. On, quote, context, end quote, and its creation. Sam Weinberg, a cognitive psychologist who studies historical learning, explains, quote, contexts are neither found nor located, and words are not put into context. Context, from Latin, contexere, means to weave together, to engage in an active process of connecting things in a pattern, end quote. Following Weinberg, I intend to create a context for 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2. In such an endeavor, Weinberg explains, quote, questions are the tools of creation, end quote. There are a number of questions to ask about the Israelites' use of Egyptian writing. What we need to understand is how exactly were Israelite and Judahite scribes using Egyptian writing circa the 7th century BC? What kind of Egyptian scripts were they using, and when did they adopt them? Also, was there anything different about the way they used Egyptian scripts versus how the Egyptians themselves were writing at the time? Creating the context from hieratic texts in 7th century BC Judah. David Calabro, though not writing about the Book of Mormon, had some of these same questions in view while working on his master's thesis, which was on the use of hieratic during the period of the late monarchy. In an article summarizing his findings, he carefully examines Judahite ostraca that include hieratic writing to see what can be determined about the use of hieratic and Egyptian script by Israelite, and more specifically, Judahite scribes. He finds that the data, quote, point to the development within Judah of a unified, extensive hieratic tradition. Further, from a paleographic standpoint, this tradition appears to have been independent of those attested in Egypt during that time, end quote. On one ostracon, which contains an intermixture of Hebrew and hieratic, Calabro notices that, quote, the use of hieratic signs here extends beyond simply inserting them as symbols to substitute for Hebrew words, end quote. In other words, this is not simply Hebrew written with an Egyptian script. Still, Calabro points out something interesting. He detects that in some places, the order of hieratic signs is, quote, contrary to common Egyptian practice, but in accordance with expected Hebrew word order as well as the probable word order in spoken Egyptian, end quote. On another ostracon from the same collection, which is fully written in hieratic, Calabro observes key differences in the paleography of the hieratic signs and contemporary hieratic from Egypt, noting that the examples from Judah appear more similar to early Egyptian writing, quote, which again points to an independent Judahite development of hieratic script, end quote. Calabro finds that the writing is closer to New Kingdom scripts, circa 1550 to 1070 BC, and more specifically the 18th dynasty, circa 1543 to 1292 BC. This may suggest that the use of hieratic in Israel began close to that time, and subsequently developed independently. A third ostracon, containing a mixture of Hebrew and hieratic, appears to be a scribal exercise. As Calabro interprets it, it contains specific use of hieratic alphabetic signs rather than merely numerals and measurements. Hence, this offers, quote, the first example of hieratic uniliteral signs in late monarchic Judah, thus strengthening the assertion that the hieratic signs in use there were part of a basically complete system, end quote. Some hieratic signs from this inscription also, quote, match fairly well the examples from the New Kingdom, end quote. Calabro concludes that the evidence on this ostracon points to, quote, an extensive hieratic component in the scribal education of Judahites, at least in the place where the ostracon was composed, end quote. From all this, Calabro reaches some important conclusions about the use of hieratic in Judah in the 7th century BC. Quote, all three of the ostraca discussed in this paper seem to belong to a single tradition of hieratic writing. Paleographically, this tradition appears to have been separate from the script traditions of contemporary Saite Egypt. Some of the signs on the ostraca from Judah do not resemble any known forms from Egyptian papyri. In the case of the SM sign, the form of the sign more closely resembles hieroglyphic form. The Judahite hieratic tradition, developing independently from the contemporary scribal traditions in Egypt, must have diverged from them at an earlier period. It is therefore not inconceivable that the tradition of hieratic writing in the southern Levant has its ultimate roots in a period even before the New Kingdom, perhaps being used on documents now lost to us. This does not, however, exclude the possibility of New Kingdom and later influence on this tradition. The extent of the hieratic system used in this tradition, Arad 25, 34, and the ostracon from Tel el-Kudariat, indicate that the hieratic tradition in Judah lasted in a fuller form than only the isolated use of numbers and units of measurement. In particular, it included hieratic alphabetic signs, logographic signs, and Egyptian conventions of sign sequence. All three of the ostraca discussed here come from the Negev region in the southern part of Judah. In view of the unity of script forms mentioned above, the wide distribution of hieratic numerals and other isolated hieratic signs in Judah indicates a widespread presence of scribes educated in this Judahite variety of Egyptian script, end quote. The same ostraca Calabro examines are among the samples of Hebrew-Egyptian hybrid writing appealed to by Latter-day Saint writers. They also make observations that are useful in our attempt to create context. For example, in discussing an ostracon from the same Arad collection that two of Calabro's three examples come from, Stephen D. Ricks and John A. Tvednes reported, quote, the text on the ostracon is written in a combination of Egyptian hieratic and Hebrew characters, but can be read entirely as Egyptian. Of the 17 words in the text, 10 are written in hieratic and 7 in Hebrew, end quote. The significance here is that the underlying language was Egyptian, not Hebrew. At least brief mention should be made of Stephen Wimmer, who has carefully studied the hieratic text from Israel and Judah. Wimmer reasoned, based on some chronological changes in Israelite hieratic text, consistent with changes in Egyptian script, that there was, quote, continued contact of some sort between Egyptian and Hebrew scribes, probably over several centuries, end quote. This observation is driven by Wimmer's view that, quote, the hieratic of these texts does not differ from the cursive script used in contemporary Egypt, end quote. Such views differ from that of Calabro, though he does insist that his own analysis, quote, does not exclude the possibility of New Kingdom and later influence on this tradition, end quote. Calabro found that certain signs appear to be closer to older forms of hieratic, but does not preclude others possibly found on other ostraca from being influenced by latter conventions of writing found in Egypt. Other scholars, however, have made observations more consistent with Calabro's finding. For example, biblical scholar Philip J. King and Lawrence E. Steger similarly explain, quote, "Documents from the kingdoms of both Israel and Judah, but not the neighboring kingdoms of the 8th and 7th centuries B.C., contain Egyptian hieratic signs, cursive hieroglyphics, and numerals that had ceased to be used in Egypt after the 10th century B.C., end quote. John S. Thompson said something very similar while discussing 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2. Quote, "The kind of Egyptian script being employed on those artifacts dating around the time of Lehi is hieratic, but since Demotic was the script of the day in northern Egypt and abnormal hieratic was predominant in southern Egypt, the normal hieratic tradition in Canaan must have been adopted from an earlier time, possibly during the reigns of David and Solomon, or even earlier in the 10th century B.C., and was in continued use in Israel," end quote. Like Calabro, these scholars find that hieratic in Palestine appears to be from an earlier, not contemporary, form of the Egyptian script. Calabro's work further illuminates the roots of this practice, suggesting it goes back even earlier than the 10th century B.C. into the New Kingdom in Egyptian periodization. This corresponds with the Late Bronze Age, circa 1550 to 1200 B.C. in Canaan. Concurring with Calabro in this regard is Seth L. Sanders, who writes, quote, "The style of hieratic prominent in Iron Age Israel and Judah shows strongest contact with contemporary Iron Age Egypt, but with archaic Late Bronze Age forms," end quote. Sanders connects this persistence of archaic forms with the perpetuation of the tradition, quote, "below the radar of state bureaucracy," end quote, opening up the possibility that such scribal practices were part of familial traditions passed on by successive generations. Such an absence of state-sponsored scribal training may also explain why, according to Sanders, quote, "the hieratic evidence shows that Hebrew scribes were taught complex techniques, yet lacks any remains of a complex curriculum," end quote. Returning to Calabro's work, his careful scrutiny also discovers that though the signs read as Egyptian, they sometimes came in word orders more akin to Hebrew writing. This verifies Matt Bowen's assertion that, quote, "Hebraisms can exist in an Egyptian text," end quote. According to Ricks and Tevednus, the hieratic is sometimes intermixed with Hebrew signs, though the whole text may still be read as Egyptian. Other times, it appears from Calabro's analysis, both Hebrew and Egyptian script and language are intermixed. Nephi's language with context, a sensible interpretation. Having woven together a context primarily using Calabro, but also drawing on Thompson, King, and Steger, Ricks and Tevednus, Wimmer and Sanders, how should we interpret Nephite's language, quote, "consisting of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians," end quote? It is reasonable to suggest that Nephi's language is part of a centuries-old and widespread scribal tradition in Judah of writing in hieratic Egyptian. Nephi calls it, quote, "the language of my father," end quote, 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2. And evidence suggests that rather than being perpetuated by the state for bureaucratic interests, this tradition was passed on within the family. By Nephi's day, the hieratic script was often intermixed with Hebrew script, incorporating Hebrew word orders and scribal habits, thus differing from Egyptian as it was written in Egypt. Calabro calls it a, quote, "Judahite variety of Egyptian script." Wimmer calls it, quote, "Palestinisches hieratisch," end quote, Palestinian hieratic. Both of these seem functionally equivalent to Nephi's, quote, "learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians," end quote. It is, as Sidney B. Sperry hypothesized 80 years ago, quote, a Hebraized Egyptian, end quote. Within this context, it is not likely that Nephi's writing was Hebrew language in an Egyptian script. The awkwardness of such an arrangement was long ago pointed out by Hugh Nibley. Now we know this is not how hieratic was being used in Nephi's day, since Calabro specifically notices what could be called Hebraisms, Hebrew word orders, in the hieratic writing, the presence of Hebraisms not typically found in Egyptian, as the Egyptians write, is insufficient evidence to assert that the underlying language is Hebrew as opposed to Nephi's statement that it is Egyptian. Indeed, the most natural interpretation of Nephi's statement is that he was writing Egyptian in the way that the Jews had learned to write it, that is, according their own independent scribal tradition, which had some natural syncretism with Hebrew, but was nonetheless Egyptian. It is impressive how well these findings accord with views expressed by Nibley several decades ago. Nibley staunchly insisted that, quote, Egyptian could be written in less space than Hebrew because in Lehi's day, Demotic was actually a shorthand, extremely cramped and abbreviated. It could be used very economically for writing Egyptian, but not for any other language, end quote. Lehi and his sons, Nibley argued, quote, had no reason for learning Egyptian characters than to read and write Egyptian, end quote. Nibley also reasoned that Lehi would have learned Egyptian not in Egypt, but, quote, in Palestine, of course, before he ever thought of himself as a record keeper, end quote, thus hinting at the idea that Lehi, and subsequently Nephi, would have learned Egyptian from an Israelite scribal tradition, something Nibley says, quote, had been in progress long before Lehi's day, end quote. Nibley even suspected some syncretism with Hebrew, pointing to an inscribed dagger, quote, which neatly combines Egyptian and Hebrew in a process of fusion for which a great deal of evidence now exists, end quote. The only substantive difference is that Nephi's most immediate context supports the use of hieratic rather than demotic. While many of Nibley's old hypotheses have fallen to further findings of scholarship, this one has largely been strengthened by new findings. That Nephi specifies his language is according to, quote, the learning of the Jews, end quote, indicates that he has some awareness that there are differences in how the Egyptians themselves write and use their language. He may be referring to the differences in script, in word order, in the incorporation of some Hebrew linguistic elements, or most likely all of the above. The awareness of these differences could come only from having some contact with, quote, pure, end quote, Egyptian scribal practices, as Wimmer's findings suggest. This awareness of Egyptian according to the, quote, learning of the Egyptians, end quote, to adapt Nephi's phrase, could explain why Nephi makes a statement about his language at all. Familiar with both traditions of Egyptian writing, Nephi may have felt a need to specify that his was the Judahite variety. Readers of the Egyptian variety would probably still be able to read the Palestinian hieratic, but may have struggled. Perhaps Nephi was hoping to help such potential readers avoid confusion from the Hebraized elements of his Egyptian writing by telling them up front that this was the Judahite variety of hieratic. The context created from late pre-Exilic scribal practice in Judah allows for a sensible interpretation of 1 Nephi chapter 1 verse 2 that resolves its ambiguity. The data allow us to see just what the, quote, language of the Egyptians, end quote, according to, quote, the learning of the Jews, end quote, actually consisted of, and interpret Nephi's statement accordingly. No such explanatory context can be reasonably fashioned out of Joseph Smith's world, where the reaction of contemporaries indicates that the phrase was as perplexing to readers then as it is now. This has been a recording of Learning Nephi's Language, Creating a Context for 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2, by Neil Rapley, originally published in Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, Volume 16, 2015, pages 151 through 159. Read by Scott Dunaway. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged, the journal and its website are credited, and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles and resources on Mormon scripture can be found at mormoninterpreter.com.